Radio 3, we're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. The time now is 1 o'clock, and here's the news with John Shea.
A coach carrying British teenagers home from a school skiing trip in Italy has crashed in northern France, killing a 61-year-old man. The Foreign Office says four or five other people, including children, were seriously or critically injured. The accident involving the group from Olve Church School in Worcestershire happened in the early hours of this morning. A 47-year-old man is being held in police custody on suspicion of murdering a vicar in South Gloucestershire. Stephen Farrow was arrested early this morning in Folkestone in Kent. The Reverend John Suddards was found stabbed at his vicarage in Thornbury on Tuesday. The Foreign Secretary has warned Iran that it would not benefit from igniting a nuclear arms race in the Middle East, amid claims that the country is preparing to expand its nuclear programme. In an interview with the BBC, William Hague insisted that sanctions and negotiations had to be given a real chance to convince Tehran to abandon its nuclear ambitions. Around 20 people have been killed in two attacks in the Iraqi capital Baghdad. A suicide bomber blew up his car at a checkpoint, killing at least 15 police officers and tribal militiamen. Elsewhere in the city, gunmen, thought to be from Al-Qaeda, stormed a house, killing four police informants. The Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, has called for a temporary cut in VAT to stimulate economic growth. The Conservatives argue that the government has to live within its means and must reduce spending to cut the deficit. Mr. Balls said the government's programme of austerity was crushing and destroying growth. The legendary Sudanese singer Muhammad Usman Wadi has died in Khartoum at the age of 80. He popularised the traditional instruments of his native region of Nubia. Known for his left-wing views, Muhammad Usman Wadi was jailed by the then president, Jafar al-Numeri, in the 1980s and later went into exile. And the weather. It'll be a largely dry and fine afternoon across the UK with lengthy spells of sunshine. However, a few showers will affect coastal fringes of Scotland, Northern Ireland and North Wales. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 1:02.
Read by John Shea. I'm Jill Anderson. Good afternoon to you. Just looking ahead to 2 o'clock, we have a concert given by the BBC National Chorus and Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Jack van Steen. Sibelius's Tapiola, followed by the Violin Concerto, played by Akiko Suwanae, and Elgar's The Music Makers with the mezzo-soprano Jane Irwin. That's the Sunday concert at 2 o'clock. But now it's time for today's Early Music Show, which today explores the life and work of a much-revered Spanish master. Here's Catherine Bott.
Francisco Guerrero, the meeting of artistry and elegant counterpoint, the rewards of an eternal pen, in the sum of all times, no other reached such heights.
Thank you.
Ensemble Plus Ultra, directed by Michael Noon, with a hymn to the Virgin Mary from 16th century Spain. From my school history lessons, I remember that time being called the Golden Century of Spain, and it was certainly a golden age for Spanish music. The two big names that spring immediately to mind are Tomás Luis de Victoria and Cristóbal de Morales. But in today's early music show, I'm going to take a look at the life and music of the composer whose work makes a bridge between the two, Francisco Guerrero, called the Sweet One, the Beloved of the Infant God, who wrote the music we've just heard, and for whom that tribute at the start of the programme was written. Slightly underrated in later centuries, in his own time, he was the most admired musician in Spain. Although Guerrero spent most of his life in his native land, he was also one of the most widely travelled musicians of the Renaissance, as you'll hear, and despite spending most of his life as a church musician, he wrote a number of secular songs in his not at all misspent youth. In his home city of Seville, they were called villanescas, jolly little ditties. Green flowery meadows, you witness my sorrows. Please whisper them to my fair, cruel shepherdess. Prado Verde y Florido by Francisco Guerrero, performed by Musica Ficta and Ensemble Fontegara, directed by Raúl Mallavibarena. A harmless little pastoral by the sound of it, perhaps not much of a jolly little ditty, though. These villanescas were sophisticated pieces, slumming it in the guise of folk songs, and some of their lyrics were very secular indeed. In Guerrero's case, they were the work of his youth, as I've said, and later in life he reworked 18 of the most refined songs for devotional purposes. So Green Flowery Meadows became Bread Divine, Gracious and Holy. Let's go back to the beginning of his life. Francisco Guerrero was born in Seville in 1528, presumably into a musical family, because his first music lessons were entrusted to his brother, Pedro. Young Francisco taught himself to play the vihuela, harp, cornet and organ. In April 1542, he became an alto in the choir of Seville Cathedral, and 3 years after that, he had some lessons from the great master Cristóbal de Morales, now middle-aged and newly returned to Spain after years in Rome. When Guerrero was just 17, Morales recommended him for the job of maestro di capilla at Jaén Cathedral, which was a huge compliment. Jaén is the capital of the most northeasterly province of the ancient kingdom of Andalusia. Guerrero was on the threshold of a great career in church music. Later in life, he paid tribute to Morales in a parody mass based on his mentor's motet Simile est Regnum Celorum. Let's hear the Kyrie from that mass, and before it, the original motet, to get an idea of the accomplishments that Morales was passing on. The text is from Matthew chapter 20. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire labourers into his vineyard. Edith Ho, directing the choir of the Church of the Advent in Boston, Massachusetts, in music first by Morales and then his pupil, Guerrero. Now, what was I saying about a young man on the threshold of a great career in church music? I may have to take it back. Guerrero's talent was never in doubt, but his skills as supervisor, teacher, vocal coach and house parent to his six choir boys were not very highly developed. After a year, he was dismissed, but on appeal was reinstated and given a second chance. Well, he was only 18 himself. After another few months in Jaén, Guerrero became restless. A pattern was emerging that would repeat itself throughout his career. In August 1549, he was granted leave of absence to return to Seville. And once he got home, he accepted the offer of a singing post at the cathedral. He'd finished with Jaén. Life in Seville suited him much better, and he grew in fame, publishing his compositions in Spain, France and Italy. Quite a coup for such a young man. Other provinces in Andalusia started courting him. Malaga Cathedral was particularly keen to give him its top job. So in 1551, the Seville Cathedral chapter made sure he stayed put by offering him the job of assistant maestro di capilla, following it up with a papal brief which gave him security of tenure and the right to succeed the current incumbent. That was more like it. Guerrero stayed in Seville, with occasional excursions to present his latest publications to the great, the good, and the imperial. The Agnus Dei from Guerrero's Missa Congratulamini Mihi, published in Paris in 1566, and sung on that recording by the Cardinal's Music, directed by Andrew Carwood. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and today I'm tracing the life of Spanish composer Francisco Guerrero. During his Seville years, Guerrero became admired at home and abroad, which seems to have reactivated his pasión de viajar, or wanderlust. It's funny how itchy feet sound more romantic in Spanish or German. In January 1566, he was granted a 50-day leave of absence to present his latest volume of works to the King of Portugal. The next year he was away longer, helping with the selection of a new Maestro di Capilla all the way over in Córdoba. And in 1570 and 71, he was constantly on the road, from Santander to Segovia, in the royal retinue that was dispatched to offer a warm and lengthy welcome to Spain for Princess Anna, daughter of Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian, who was to marry King Philip II of Spain. It wasn't until 1574 that Guerrero finally became officially Maestro di Capilla in Seville. He'd been there for 25 years and was now 46 years old. The cathedral authorities must have understood his desire to be off again and trusted him to return, because in 1579 they granted him a whole year's leave of absence to visit Rome. Before going, he spent 2 years preparing for publication two large collections of his music, which were indeed published in Rome after his lengthy stay there. On his return to Seville, it became obvious that the cathedral chapter would have to appoint a reliable assistant for Guerrero. His travelling days weren't over yet. But Rome had just been a local outing compared with the next voyage he was to undertake.
Thank you.
Deliver me, O Lord. An appropriate text for a nomadic composer, perhaps. The Liberame Domine from Guerrero's second setting of the Requiem Mass, sung by Musica Ficta, directed by Raul Mallavibarena. Guerrero was a man of faith. He'd thought of entering the priesthood as a young boy, and in the late 1580s he conceived a longing to visit the Holy Land. In 1588, in the company of the Cardinal Archbishop of Seville, he set out for the royal court to kiss King Philip's hand, and then to Venice for a week, before embarking on a four-month voyage to Zakynthos, Jaffa, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Damascus. No other composer of his time is known to have undertaken such a journey. And if you heard my early music show a while back about the vicissitudes of Renaissance travel, you'll be reminded of what an arduous adventure it must have been. Towards the end of his life, when he needed the money, Guerrero was to write a book about the whole trip, called, reasonably enough, Journey to Jerusalem. Meanwhile, when he got back to Venice, he rested there for 6 weeks, preparing music for publication, his second book of motets and the collection of Vijanescas made holy that I mentioned earlier on. And then it was back to Seville. Hindsight is 20/20 vision, they say. One can imagine Guerrero wishing afterwards that he'd travelled overland rather than sailing via Genoa and Marseille. His ship was raided not once but twice by pirates who threatened his life, stole his money, and held him to ransom.
Thank you.
Piffero playing an instrumental version of a piece by Guerrero, whose title conjures up the fear he must have felt when pirates climbed aboard. Flee, flee! And before that, Musica Ficta with Guerrero's Dicebat Jesus, in which Jesus tells the Jews that only those who believe can hear God's word. Well, Guerrero's prayers must have been answered, and his ransom paid, because he did make it back to Spain in one piece. The first thing he did on landing was to visit the shrine at Montserrat. He resumed his duties in Seville in the summer of 1589. After that, his life took a rather sad turn. The cost of publishing his music, combined with what the pirates had taken, rendered him so deeply in debt that he was forced once again to take on the responsibility of looking after the cathedral choristers. He was as ill-suited to the job at the age of 62 as he had been at 18 back in Jaén. Just 2 years after getting back to Spain, he was in a debtor's prison. The cathedral bailed him out after a month, paid off his debts, and allowed him time to write and publish his travel memoir, which did rather well. In the prologue to the book, he described his longing to return to the Holy Land. And amazingly enough, in January 1599, the cathedral authorities granted him a final leave of absence of 1 year.
Thank you.
A setting of the Ave Maria by Guerrero, Peter Phillips directing the Talis Scholars. If only Guerrero had left for the Holy Land immediately, in January 1599. But for various reasons he procrastinated. In the summer of that year, plague swept through Seville and carried the 71-year-old Guerrero off with it. Francisco Guerrero, the meeting of artistry and elegant counterpoint, the rewards of an eternal pen, in the sum of all times, no other reached such heights. I began today's programme with those warm words by Vicente Espinel, but they bear repeating. Guerrero really was hugely admired. This much-travelled musician died where he'd been born, in Seville. And of all Spanish Renaissance composers, he was perhaps the one who spent most time in his native land. Morales and Victoria, for example, both lived for long periods in Italy. And they only wrote sacred music. Guerrero left us, as you would expect, 18 settings of the Mass, 2 settings of the Requiem Mass, and about 150 other liturgical works. But he also wrote a significant number of secular songs and instrumental pieces. His music remained popular long after his death, especially in Latin America. And now the early music movement has done a great deal to restore him to his rightful place in what one ensemble director calls the Holy Trinity of religious polyphony in Golden Age Spain, along with Morales and Victoria. Just as Francisco Guerrero had paid tribute to Cristóbal de Morales with the parody mass based on the text Simile est Regnum Celorum, he was honoured posthumously with a mass of the same name by the third member of that musical trinity, a composer whose music bridges the gap between Renaissance and Baroque. So let's end with something from that setting. Stephen Darlington directs the choir of Christ Church Cathedral, Oxford, in part of the mass Simile est Regnum Celorum by Tomás Luis de Victoria.
the Agnus Dei from the Mass Simile Est Regnum Caelorum by Tomas Luis de Victoria. It was sung in that recording by the choir of Christchurch Cathedral, Oxford, directed by Stephen Darlington. And that ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Catherine Bott and produced by Sam Phillips. And from tomorrow morning, you can download a podcast version of that programme via the Radio 3 homepage. Just follow the links to the Early Music Show programme page.
For Radio 3 Live in Concert, an all-Russian programme, live from London's Barbican Hall. From one of the greatest love themes of all time. To the gripping symphonic writing of Shostakovich's Fifth. Radio 3 live in concert with Valery Gergiev and the London Symphony Orchestra. Tuesday night at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And at 5 o'clock this evening, Alla Jones will be here with the choir. Tonight she'll be joined by the composer Sasha Johnson Manning to discuss the People's Passion Project, which looks at modern life in cathedrals across the land and includes specially commissioned choral music and a new mass, along with 5 new dramas and documentaries. And the work is due for broadcast on BBC Radio 4 in Holy Week. That's all in the choir at 5 o'clock this evening. But it's just 2:00 now, time for the Sunday Concert, which was recorded in Cardiff on the 10th of February. It's introduced by Nicola Hayward-Thomas.
Welcome to St David's Hall for a concert given by the BBC National Orchestra and Chorus of Wales. We'll hear 3 works written in the first 3 decades of the 20th century. Edward Elgar's large-scale choral piece, The Music Makers, and 2 works by Jean Sibelius, his tone poem Tapiola, and the famous violin concerto with soloist Akiko Suwanai. Our conductor is the principal guest of the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, Jacques Van Steen.
If you come to think of it, it's almost the same time that the works have been written. And mind you, the Sibelius violin concerto is the oldest piece of the programme. Elgar was later. And the Tapiola is the last big symphonic work that Sibelius wrote for orchestra. The motto, sort of the content of the pretty 19th century sentimental text of the Elgar, which is a motto that I completely share, we are the music makers, we are the dreamers of dreams, also comes very close to how I think Sibelius wanted music to be heard. And I think, knowing a lot of contemporary composers, Tapiola shows the visionary modern aspect of Sibelius in the early 20s of the 20th century, being more modern than about more than half of the modern composers still alive.
This afternoon's conductor, Jacques Van Steen. Tapiola was Sibelius's last major work. Early in 1926, he'd been asked to write a piece for the New York Symphony Society. The choice of subject and form was left completely up to the composer, but the duration wasn't. It had to be between 15 and 20 minutes. Well, Sibelius turned to Finnish mythology, as he'd done so many times before, and in particular, Tapio, the god of the forests. In his score, Sibelius wrote these lines, "Widespread they stand, the Northland's dusky forest, ancient, mysterious, brooding, savage dreams. Within them dwells the forest's mighty god, and wood sprites in the gloom weave magic secrets." And now here comes Jacques Van Steen to lead us into the woods with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales in Tapiola by Sibelius.